world famous Phil Henry show every night here till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast here from the El Pacifico. We're going to bring on Pastor William Rennick from Joyful Union Congregation, who's been a frequent contributor to our program, because he has a bit of a unique perspective on the forthcoming film W, which is about the presidency of George Bush, the current president. And Pastor Rennick, welcome to the program. You know Oliver Stone, correct?
Yeah, Phil, I know Oliver Stone. We are in transit right now. I'm going to a prayer vigil for a young man who's a member of my congregation. He's been very, very sick. So if we get a little bit of cell interference, what they call a...
It's a cell dropout.
If the cell drops out, did I hear Clara?
Yeah, if the cell drop out, is that what they call
it? He doesn't understand.
All right, I understand. Okay, everything's good. The cell, if it drops out, we'll call you back. You call us back, okay?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We'll call you back. Oliver Stone, I'd known him because he had come to our church, and I thought that the man was interested in becoming a member of our congregation. I know he had done these movies because I'd seen some people tell me, you know, he did a movie called... the platoon movie, right?
Yeah, about Vietnam, yeah.
Yeah, about Vietnam. Born on the 4th of July, another one, yeah.
Yeah, he did Nixon.
And he did a movie called Nixon. And so I know he'd done movies about presidents.
Well, he had done Nixon, JFK, and I guess this is his third effort about presidents.
Right, so, you know, I got to talk. He came to the church. I said I didn't know who he was. I said, my name is Oliver Stone. And I still didn't know who he was. I said, Mr. Stone, what do you do for a living? And he gave me a look, you know. He says, well, he says, you don't know. And I said, no, I don't. He said, I make movies. I said, you're a movie director? He said, yes, I am. I said, well, what movies have made? And he looked a little bit offended, and that's when Clara, you were there, right?
Well, I came in later, yeah.
Yeah, Clara said that, she said, well, you know, Look, Oliver Stone has made a lot of movies. He's made, and then she mentioned the movies he's made. So he seemed to be upset with me, but I said to him, what can I do for you? He said, I want to use your church because I want to film a scene for a movie that I'm doing. And I said, well, what's the movie about? And he told me, well, I'd rather really not tell you what the movie's about. And also, I don't want to tell you what the movie's about because, you hurt my feelings.
He really said that, huh?
Yeah, he said that I'd hurt his feelings when I didn't know what he did for a living or what movie he made.
Did he ever tell you what the movie was? Or?
Hold on, I'm getting to that. He said to me, I feel like I've intruded on you. I said, no, yeah, not intruded on me. I said, but are you interested in becoming a member of Joyful Union Congregation? Now, he's a white man. We do have white members of our congregation, but we don't have, I'd say, about 25%.
I mean, about 35.
What's that?
About 35.
She said 35?
Yeah, but no, it's 25.
It's about 20, 35.
What difference does it make if it's 25 or 35?
Because 35 is bigger than 25.
All right, well, so it's 35 then, Phil. With 35%, we got whites. So, I'm always interested in getting more white participants, in our church.
Right.
So, but he said, no, I'm not interested in that. I'd like to use the church. And I said, for what? He said, because I want to film a scene for one of my movies. And that's when I asked him, I said, what's it about? He would tell me, because he said he didn't want me to know, and he also didn't want to tell me because he was a little bit offended that I didn't know who he was. So,
all right, you told us about that, so pick it up from there.
Pick it up? Well, no, I didn't tell you about that.
Yes, you did. You already went into that.
I didn't think I did.
You already told me that he came to the church, Pastor Rennick, and that you didn't know who he was, and you it looked like he was offended by that.
All right, so I said to him, take a left here. Take a left.
I know where I'm going.
Take a left here. Take a left here! She's going to get us... So I said to him...
Look, don't yell at her, all right, man? We're on the radio, please.
Okay. You know, I don't like being referred to as man, though, because it makes it sound like I'm some kind of a hustler, you know, and I'm not a hustler.
and you could call somebody else man, Phil.
All right, I apologize, Pastor Rennick. Please, continue.
So I said to him, Mr. Stone, if you want to film a movie here, that's going to take up my congregation's time and time away from church. He said, that's all right, we pay you for that. And so I said to him, well, how much do you pay? And he gave me a figure, and I said, well, you're going to have to get it way up in the air, you know. And so he said, well, you know, that's all we pay. I said, well, I can't do it. He said, and I said to him, I said, you know, look, I got a church here. I got a lot of people here that they rely upon the Spirit. This is their spiritual home, you know.
Right.
And I said, if you want to take up this, I said, how long is it going to take? And he told me it's going to take about 3 days to shoot the scene. I said, well, that's a lot of time. So I said, I said a number. He said to me, no, that's too much. I said, well, I can't do it. I said, when you want to get that number way up in the air, you know, you got to get that way up, you know.
Right.
I said, you're going to take over the spiritual home. You got to get that number way up. Yeah. I said, you're taking over the spiritual home of many hundreds of people in this community.
All right. What I want to say right now...
I said, you got to get the number way, way up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he said to me, I can't do it. I said, well, nice talking to you.
Okay.
Hold on for a minute.
All right, but I just want to ask you one question. Did he ever get around to filming the scene?
Hold on a minute, Phil. You got to hold on. You're like everybody else I know in my life. You're always in a hurry.
I got a time constraint here.
I know you got a time constraint. I got a watch. They got a wonderful thing now. You can wrap it around your wrist. It's called a watch. You know?
All right, I didn't know that you were looking at the time.
I'm looking at the time. I'm looking at the time. So now the man comes back. Now, here's what happened. These two guys show up about 2 days later. And they're both wearing black leather jackets. And they both got the look on them. You know, they're wearing the sunglasses and the hair is kind of oiled back. And I said to myself, I've never seen these kinds of gentlemen in my neighborhood. I said, can I help you, gentlemen? They're in my office this time. They said, yeah, we are here from Oliver Stone. And we understand he came here and said he want to rent this building out. I said, yeah, that's my church. And they said, well, we suggest you take his offer. And I looked at them, I said, man, you... I said, you got a pair on, you know, I didn't say this. I said, they got a...
Did you think they were threatening you?
I don't know what they were doing. I said, let me tell you what. I said, I don't know what you dudes are about. But nobody come in here and suggest nothing to me, you know.
Yeah.
I said, this is my church, you know, this is where I take care of the spiritual needs of people. Nobody come in here suggest nothing to me.
Right.
So they said to me, well, you know, this Oliver Stone. I said, I don't care, Oliver Stone. You know, I don't care if he's Sly Stone. You know what I mean? I don't care if he's Sly the Family Stone, you know. I said, he offered me a number. I said, you got to get the number way up there.
Right.
Way up there.
Yeah.
And they said, don't we scare you?
Wait a minute, what'd they say?
They said to me, don't we scare you? And I said, no, you don't scare me. And they said, and they left.
Yeah, just like that, Phil, I remember that.
Wait a minute, they said, don't we scare you? And when you said no...
I said no.
They left.
That's right, they left. And as they're leaving, going out of the car, I said, you get out. I said, I'll tell you what. You want to feel what it's like to have a size 11... Bregoli shoe stuffed way, way up your rear end. You come on back.
So you're telling me that Oliver Stone came to your church?
Well, no, not Oliver Stone. These two guys...
No, but before these two guys, Oliver Stone came to your church and wanted to rent out your church.
Well, I don't know if it's Oliver Stone or not, but he said he was Oliver. What did he say it was?
Well, he said he could represent Oliver Stone.
He said he represented Oliver Stone.
It was not Oliver Stone.
No, I don't think it was Oliver Stone.
Well, why did you say it was Oliver Stone?
I don't remember saying that at all.
Yes, you did. You said it was Oliver Stone that came to your church, and he was offended that you didn't know who he was.
No, I told the guy, whoever the guy was. What was his name?
Floyd or something.
Didn't they have a name like Floyd?
Floyd? You told me that Oliver Stone...
Well, you think this is funny?
Yeah, no, man. I don't think it's fun. I think it's ridiculous is what it is. You told me Oliver Stone came to your church and wanted to rent it out and was offended that you didn't know who he was. And then he sent two... It sounds like he sent two goons to try to intimidate you. And they said, don't we scare you? You said no. They left.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, was Oliver Stone there or not?
No, a guy named Floyd.
That's right, Bill Floyd.
Well, what? How could you say it was Oliver Stone?
Well, what the guy's name was Oliver. And then I said, well, it was the Oliver, the Floyd. And it was Floyd Stone, so it wasn't Floyd Stone. But
let me talk to Clara.
You interviewing me?
Let me talk to Clara.
You want to talk to
you? Yes, Phil.
Who was the guy that came to your church?
The first man was a man by the name of Floyd. His last name was Crenshaw. Floyd Crenshaw.
Did he represent Oliver Stone?
I don't think so. I think William thought he did. I thought he's just a con man from the neighborhood. I'd seen him. I seen him down at the Quick Mart.
A con man from the neighborhood who...
That's Hal Webb.
It is Hal Webb. A con man from the neighborhood. And William thought...
That man was Oliver Stone. Then he said his name was Floyd.
I knew his name was not Oliver Stone from the very gate. And then these two men come. They're trying to shake us down, that's all.
Was Oliver Stone at your church?
No, he's never at our church, no.
Yeah, who was that guy that I talked to?
You just said it was a man named Floyd Crenshaw.
No, you said it was Floyd Crenshaw.
Yeah, all right, but you knew who it was.
I didn't know who it was. Damn.
Just drive the car. Hold on, just drive the car.
So Oliver Stone was never at your church, and he never wanted to rent it out to...
As far as I know, no. Some guy named Floyd Crenshaw wanted it. To rent it out, but I think he's just taking us down.
And Floyd Crenshaw then sent two goons.
I'm sorry, Phil, but I told him it was nothing.
All right, Pastor Rennick, drive carefully, okay? And in the future, would you please get your facts straight?
What'd you say?
Would you please get your facts straight?
What'd
you say? He said, get your facts straight.
I got my facts straight.
No, you do not have your facts straight. Telling me Oliver Stone was there and it wasn't. Some guy named Floyd Crenshaw.
At the time, that's what I thought it was.
Well, that ain't good enough.
And what your language is ain't. That ain't.
I hear you fracture the English language all the time.
And don't call me man, either. I ain't no hustler.
I'm not,
that's right, I ain't no hustler.
I'm not a hustler.
You may not be one. I'm kidding around, Phil. God bless you.
Thank you very much. What kind of a joke is that?
I knew they were crazy when they said that Oliver... Stone was over there.
Anyway, W, the trailers are in the theater now. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
I'm back on the air right now, okay?
I know you're back on the air, but you got to understand what it was you did to me and what you did to my reputation. And I want to demonstrate to you what you've done to my reputation.
What do you mean I didn't do anything to your reputation? You said on the air, I got to go, you know? I already devoted a whole segment to you.
Yeah, you devoted a whole segment to me. You devoted a segment to me to destroy my reputation. That's what you did to my reputation. You hear that? You hear that?
Yeah. What is that, a blender?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You took my reputation, and you fed it into a... If my reputation were a kitten, this is what you done to it. Right here, this you done.
If your reputation was a kitten...
Hey, look, don't stop playing like you don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. You're the guy that said that Floyd... First you say it's Oliver Stone, then you say it's a guy named Floyd Crenshaw...
Yeah, look at it right here. This is what you done. This is what you done. Right here. With my reputation. Right in here. If my reputation was a bunny rabbit or something.
Will you get this guy off the air before... Don't ever put a guest back on, bud.
Yeah, but he's the pastor of a church.
It does. Well, you're not going to go to hell, man. You're not. Don't worry. Don't ever put a guest on again. I mean, I give them every chance to have the last word, and they don't want to take the last word. Or if the last word that they do take sounds like they, you know, they took about a bottle of dumb pills before they called the show, that's their problem, not mine.
Yeah, but you didn't give them a chance to explain.
The hell I didn't give him a chance to explain. He said that Oliver Stone came to visit. Then he said Floyd Crenshaw came to visit.
Right.
Right. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm glad you understand him, man. Maybe you guys can get together and commiserate.
The what?
You can get together and you can agree with each other. Go to a phone call here, 1-800-449-8255. World famous Phil Henry Show. Here is Henry listening to us on K-Talk in La Habra, California. Henry, go ahead.
Yeah, Phil, regarding what you just said, I think you're no different than Don Imus and Rush Limbaugh, you know? You use a racial slur over the air, calling Chinese people Chinaman. I mean, how do you respond
to
that?
I just did. I did that 3 hours ago, man. You've been listening for a long time.
Yes, you did. And if you used the N-word on that gentleman you just had, you'd be off the air.
If I use the N-word on the gentleman I just had?
Yes, on that.
I call him the N-word all the time.
No, well, if you use the N-word over the
No,
air.
I did. I do over the air.
I don't.
I know him. I know him, and he doesn't mind
it. You refer to Chinese people as Chinaman, and I as an Asian American, am offended by that.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
If you were truly offended by that, then that's what you would have called up saying. But instead, you said McCain shouldn't criticize Obama. So you see, you called in under false pretenses because you're just looking for something to criticize. No, you're not offended by it. You've been listening to this show for a long time, and you've been looking for something, anything, to just sort of get upset about. And you aren't quite sure what it was.
You're
not a true liberal.
You're a Klansman.
No, you're not a true liberal. You hate whites. You hate white people. You hate white people.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you do. That's why you're criticizing me, because I'm white.
No.
That's exactly right. My phone screener, my screener told me that's what you said.
Well, you know, you're on the air. You have a screener. Why don't you engage in a normal conversation, huh?
I'm engaging in a normal conversation. You're saying something that is false.
Engage in an open conversation. Don't.
I am, but you don't want to. You called up under false pretenses. You said you wanted to talk about McCain.
I'm not talking about.
And then when you, did you tell my screener that? Why did you tell my screener that?
No.
Yeah. See, you were dishonest.
No. Well, you know, you are. Why does the call have to be screened? Why can't we have an open dialogue?
Because you are an actor that I allow on my stage. This is my stage, and I pre-screen all of the auditions. See, we audition people, and if you're good. Yeah,
it's not
you get
audition.
On.
No, it's a dialogue.
If you suck,
no,
that's exactly what it is. No, that's precisely what it is. This is an entertainment product, and you, Henry, right now are for the entertainment of my audience.
No.
Yes, I'm sorry to have to tell you that.
It's too bad.
They're waiting for you to entertain. So what did you say? I said Chinaman?
Yeah, and that's a racial slur. It's just as bad as the N-word.
Not if you're kidding.
No, I mean you didn't seem like you were kidding.
Oh, no sense of humor, huh?
Henry, dude,
you gotta, come on, man.
If people are banging on Michelle Obama, supposedly that she may have used, called white people whitey.
That was discredited. Nobody believes that.
Yeah, you used Chinaman over the air.
Well, wait a minute.
And that's a racial.
Yeah, but I was joking around.
Wasn't I, Bud?
My name's Bud Dickman. I got a plate in my head, and he hires me.
Bud is developmentally disabled, and I got him working for me.
Yeah.
When I said Chinaman, was I kidding?
Yeah, you were kidding because I said it, and you were telling me not to say it.
He said it, and I told him not to say it.
Well,
Henry?
You can't equate yourself to a developmentally disabled person.
No. What I'm saying is I have a great deal of sensitivity for all kinds of people. Bud used the word Chinaman, and I criticized him, and I chastised him for it.
No, you used it. I didn't hear it come out of his mouth.
I know. I was quoting him. I was quoting him, and we were joking about it. And I said, you can't use that word. And then I went and I used it as if to reinforce a satirical point.
No. You said that cars are coming out. Watch out for the Chinaman car. It's no different than
you did say that.
I was kidding.
Japanese American.
I was joking.
Let me
explain it to you, Henry. I don't know, not that you want to understand, but here is the explanation. In the United States, because of a certain xenophobic attitude, particularly with regard to foreign products, I state, in a colloquial phrase, the fear that many have. So I use a colloquial reference. You see? Henry's gone.
You're an idiot.
No, you're an idiot. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Learn more at talkradionetwork.com. Phil Henry.
Phil Henry Show here. A poll shows most Palestinians favor violence over talks. This is a new poll. It shows that an overwhelming majority of Palestinians support the attack on a Jewish seminary in Jerusalem that killed 8 young men, most of them teenagers, an indication of the alarming level of Israeli-Palestinian tension. The survey also shows unprecedented support for the shooting of rockets on Israeli towns from the Gaza Strip and for the end of the peace negotiations between Palestinian and Israeli leaders. Now, this is a pollster by the name of Khalil Shikaki. He said he was shocked because the survey showed greater support for violence than any other he had conducted over the past 15 years in the Palestinian areas. Never before, he said, had a majority favored an end to negotiations or the shooting of rockets at Israel. Never before had Hamas basically ruled the roost among the Palestinian people. And never before had Fatah, which had been run by... You know, the guy who walked around with a napkin on his head, what was his name?
Yasser Arafat.
Yeah, Yasser Arafat, he was the bad boy on the block. But now it's shifted to this other faction, Hamas. And they are very militant and extremely aggressive. And I don't know, I haven't read their charter. I know Hezbollah believes that Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth. Hamas may be close to that. But nonetheless, the facts are the facts, and here are the facts. This is a poll taken by a guy whose office sits smack dab in the middle of the West Bank. This is a guy who's conducting a poll from right smack dab in the middle of the West Bank, where God knows how many gunmen walk the streets right by the front door of his office. I'm sorry, is it difficult, or is it difficult to understand my point of view when I say, I don't believe you can take an unbiased poll in the Palestinian territories of the Middle East without having your head stuck on a fence someplace. I just don't believe it. Well, you know what? That just shows that you're biased, Phil, against the Palestinian people. You don't think that they're able to determine their own fate. I haven't seen any evidence that the poor people of that region of the world identified as Palestinians, I haven't seen any evidence that they're allowed to control anything, having to do with whether they flush the toilet or, you know, after going number two, or whether they have to leave it there because they don't have enough. Well, I don't have any idea about how those people feel. I know what those scumbags that run the Palestinian territories think. I know what the and by God, there's been an amazing cast of characters that have flown and floated and sometimes sprinted and sometimes sort of swished and sometimes strode purposefully through that area down through the history of the Middle East. But I have no idea what the people think other than the fact that I know for sure they are brutally manipulated by the leadership of that region, as well as the leadership of the rest of the Middle East, the Iranians, the Syrians, the Saudi Arabians. I think all of the cadre of low, despicable human beings that have run the Arab states over the years have had no interest in the Palestinians and their plight other than to manipulate that topic to their own end. And they have even less interest in their own people, if you want my honest opinion, because if you took all of the money that had been raised by these so-called Arab states in solidarity to create the great pan-Arabic republic that they have so expressed a need for over the years, and you took a lot of that oil wealth that has been generated by some of their members and you took them at their word that they cared deeply about their people and deeply about the Palestinian people, and they got off their high horse about Israel, and they quit paying off people to turn themselves into pizza toppings with bombs in an Israeli pizza parlor someplace, and they began focusing more proactively on building and generating, or in some instances regenerating, an infrastructure having to do not only with freeways and highways and flushing toilets, but education and so many other things that they need desperately in that part of the world. If they put half of the energy that they're now devoting to driving the Zionists into the sea, into actually raising the plight, getting their people up off their knees and raising the life condition of their people, we wouldn't be having a problem. And it doesn't take a genius to understand any of this. It doesn't take somebody, you know, I'm not self-deluded, and I don't need anybody lecturing me. Oh, well, you just don't understand the situation there. My ass. That's what I say. My Irish red rose. Well, you know, that's like, I love these people saying, unless you've been there, you don't understand. Well, I'm a voting American citizen. I'm an informed, intelligent member of the human community. I'm sorry, I can't get around all of these places. I got a damn job to do, all right? I got a family to feed. I got other fish to freaking fry. I can't run off and jump into a Jeep with a couple of American soldiers to protect my ass like Sean Penn and play journalist for 6 months. I can't go down to Iraq and help the refugees like Angelina Jolie. God bless her. I think she's doing a great job. I think she's probably one of the most open-minded and objective of all of those douchebags that have gone down there to look at that situation. I'm talking about, you know, these civilians, well, I shouldn't say because I'm going to be reading for a movie on Friday. I better not.
Yeah, just go past it.
Well, you know what I mean. You know, I got to know which side of the bread the butter's on here, sister.
Really, so far you can go.
Exactly. So I don't think it is a. I don't think it's a long leap to understand what the situation is. Take a look at it on the face of what has happened since 1948, and you can see an unrelenting, unstoppable fascist need to kill all the Jews and give all the sand back to the Palestinians. Now, the way the Palestinian people have been aided thus far by their Arab brothers and sisters, oh man, I can't wait to see a Palestinian state in existence after the Zionists have been pushed into the sea. I just can't wait to see how all of those guys down there come running to the aid of their Palestinian friends. I'm sure, man, they'll just be sending in boatloads of cash. I mean, it's sad. It's the saddest thing of all, in my opinion. And this guy takes a poll. I got your poll. There's no poll they're taking. There's no objective review of how those people feel. There's no objective review of how the Arab people in general feel. They talk about the Arab street as if it's a mob of urchins, sweating and disheveled and dirty urchins, just sort of flowing from one alley to the next. What's happening on the Arab street? As if they're all a bunch of sweating taxi drivers who go off and get themselves a falafel from Bill O'Reilly's Falafel Emporium, the same one that he rubbed on his girlfriend. Jeez.
What an idiot that guy was.
As if they're all these just grimy, oily, sooty, dirty, violent bastards coming out of, I don't know, domino parlors. And they're out there ready to just kill the Jews and drive it all into the ocean. And then they can set up their fantastic Arab Republic. These poor people, have been lied to long enough, manipulated long enough by a unbelievably corrupt and fascistic group of leaders. It doesn't end. And people think we're doing a bad thing trying to get a democratic regime in place in Iraq. Let me tell you something. It'll be the greatest thing that ever happened in the Middle East if we can get that thing off the ground.
Phil and Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Right now in Iraq, there is a U.S.-backed operation that has begun in the volatile Diyala province northeast of Baghdad. General Ali Gaidan says the operation began on Tuesday, today, and is aimed at clearing al-Qaeda in Iraq militants from what's considered the last major insurgent stronghold near the capital. The U.S. military in northern Iraq confirms that the offensive is underway. It's been dubbed Omens of Prosperity. Now, it's an Iraqi offensive that has U.S. Backing, U.S. and Iraqi commanders have said they're more optimistic this one can work because more troops will be involved and Iraqi security forces are better prepared. I was just thinking back when I was reading the story. I was thinking back on the times when all of those Iraqi police recruits were getting blown up, killed, murdered, executed. Anybody that was trying to join the new Iraqi army, they were targeted. I don't know how many. You talk about giving your life for your country. How many Iraqis? Now, I'm not discussing right now the, quote, poor Iraqis who died at the hands of the U.S. war machine, end quote. No, I'm talking about Iraqis that actually did believe in a democratic future for the country, and they did want to join in and helping to secure that. How many of those people, men and women, have died for their country? Now, there's a number that somebody ought to keep track of. Not how many have died because the U.S. is a big, bad, terrible thing. Not how many have died because U.S.-led sanctions starved people. You know, just once, I'd like to hear a number that I'd like to hear about. Not that, you know, not no big thing. When they get around it, they get around to it. It's okay. I'm down, man. I got it. You know, it's somewhere between, like, depending upon who you talk to, 160,000 or a million Iraqis have died as the result of America being involved in the, you know, the future of Iraq, establishing a democratic future for Iraq. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to break it out a little bit. And I don't know how many people who you know, cull these numbers, whether they have the talent. Bust that one out for me. How many men and women who wanted to put on the uniform of a democratic Iraqi army, how many of them were murdered by al-Qaeda, either through execution or a bus bombing or being targeted in their barracks? How many of them in the very, very early days were literally gunned down in the street? How many of the people that were trying to register people to vote? Do you remember those days when the Iraqi people were getting ready to vote for the first time? And campaign election workers, people that were working in the working there in the polling stations, were being assassinated. They were being gunned down by al-Qaeda. Guys would jump out of a car, walk into a polling station, just shoot as many people as they could and then leave. You know, just kind of throw the gun away and walk. How many of those people died? Are they all included in this big number about how big and bad and terrible and fascistic America is? I guess for propaganda purposes, it helps. But if you want to break those numbers out, really, and not necessarily include them as victims of the U.S. invasion, but more victims of the fascism, the Islamo-fascism that has infected that part of the world, that would be a nice number to look up. It's kind of like when there were people asking the question, have you ever talked to an Iraqi? They'll tell you. They'll tell you that America being there is bad. Well, actually, yes, I have talked to an Iraqi, although he's Kurdish. And depending upon who you talk to and what day it is and what time of the day it is, either the Kurds were Iraqis or they're not. They're Kurds, see? If they happen to appreciate the U.S. invasion of Iraq, well, then they're Kurds. If they are opposed to it, well, then they're Iraqis. But the last time I checked, Iraq was effectively under the control of the government in Baghdad, that is Saddam Hussein. And I talked to a Kurdish Iraqi, or an Iraqi Kurd, and they said to me the following. They said, our plight has gotten better. Our culture has flourished. Our status in this country is much better since the U.S. invaded Iraq. Now, nobody wants to hear that because that goes against, once again, the propaganda points about what a, what a Nazi invasion this whole thing. I mean, geez, you know, some of this stuff and some of the rhetoric, man, strictly right out of 1970. All right, speaking of 1970, let's go to the Capitol Mall in Washington, D.C., where someone is making a porn movie. Actually, there's a First World War memorial where is this? The Canadian National... Where is this, man? I thought this was in Washington. This was actually a film, a porn film that was made at the First World War Memorial, which I believe is in France. A French couple was given a 4-month suspended prison sentence for making a pornographic video at the Vimy Ridge Memorial near Arras in France. After being found guilty of exhibitionism, they were fined £400 each in order to pay a symbolic 1 euro, that's 80 pence, in damages to Canada, because apparently it's the Canadian National Memorial there for the 60,000 men that Canada lost, 60,000 men that Canada lost to the First World War. Many Canadians perished in the Battle of Vimy Ridge in April of 1917 when four members of the Canadian Corps received Victoria Crosses. Despite the courageous deeds and sacrifices honored by the memorial, the couple are believed to have stripped naked and performed sex acts besides the soaring stone structure. Then they posted the video on a website, invited people to pay to watch it, and then they got arrested, and they, you know, their asses up in a sling. Nice going. These guys that are posting stuff on YouTube or wherever the hell it is that they post things, hey, look what we did. Yeah, you're under arrest. Didn't you figure on that one? Well, no. Are you an idiot or something, man? You filmed yourself breaking the law, and then you put it on... And these beating videos, man, I get it already, Fox. Every freaking night you guys have got a new one. Just what can we do about the beating videos? Can we see more beating videos? Is this a child that's beating another child, or is it an adult beating a kid, or is it a kid beating an adult? And here's another beating video featuring girls, and here's a beating video featuring men. And here's just a beating video featuring just one man. I'm kidding. Anyway, the punishment just came 6 months after another couple were fined for taking nude photographs of themselves in the same place. What do you want to bet they know each other? I got money that says they know each other.
You know, we went there and we took pictures of ourselves and we're naked.
Yeah, well, watch me. I'm going to pull the snake out of its cage.
In the latest case near Heard at Arras Criminal Court involving the married couple who are in their 30s, lawyers expressed concern at the gradual increase in such incidents at the memorial. The prosecutor, Elise Bozola, said the memorial has been known for a long time as a place where exhibitionism and voyeurism is common. There's got to be something about the memorial that makes it erotic in the minds of some people. When you look at it, yeah, it does, bud. See that?
Yeah, it looks like two of them.
It looks like two of them, yeah. In other words, it looks like two of what most guys have only one of. Very unfortunate. Very unfortunate design. Police who investigated the case said similar incidents were regularly reported at other memorial and military graveyards. Well, so I guess it ain't got nothing to do with that.
What about the Washington Monument?
What about the Washington? I don't know. Is anybody filming sex acts at the Washington Monument? See, the whole thing with the Europeans is they don't... They're totally different from us. So over here, we've got that kind of, we got an apple pie thing, but the Europeans, they're lucky that they're getting out of bed every day. They feel like they've actually achieved something just being able to go to the bathroom. I mean, with all the wars that they've had over there. Anyway, the Canadian National Memorial took 11 years to build. It was unveiled by King Edward VIII in front of 50,000 veterans and their families in 1936. Little did they know. The battlefield park which surrounds it was granted in perpetuity to Canada in 1922. The site draws 500,000 visitors a year, all of them nude. All right. What a bunch of wackos. Hey, what is it with people that they think that, you know, I don't know what it is about the human species, but as we become more free when it comes to sex, and that is we have become freer... in terms of allowing ourselves to be photographed or to be filmed, to talk about it, to talk about what used to be considered aberrant sexual acts. As much as we say that we love and protect our children, we've sexualized children more and more. But the thing that fascinates me more than anything else is what makes people think that the rest of the world is interested in their sexual behavior beyond just the, you know, passing curiosity. Because, frankly, do you want to see, like, everybody, you know? I don't. And the reason why I say that is because I told you when we stumbled on that nude beach in Hawaii, you know, forget it. Right? You know, I don't care. I mean, even if you're giving it away, it's not even – let's not even talk about it. But – there's a certain ego, I think, that people have developed when it comes to sex, that they were the ones that invented it, and that only they really know how to have sex, and only they can achieve the highest of heights, the most grand of grandiosity of passions and ecstasies. And it's like this. It's like sex is getting so boring that people are reaching for new and different things to do with it. Like, it ain't even enough to die from it, right? Well, I know a guy who got AIDS and he died. Nah, that ain't good enough. Well, what are you talking? Well, we got to do something else. I know. Let's have sex on a war memorial. There you go. I got one that'll beat that for you, though. Go ahead and have sex in a graveyard. Now, that, to me, that's worth watching. War memorial, forget it. And risking an STD, forget it, even if it is AIDS. No, I say what we do now, if you really want to post something on YouTube, have a video of yourself made with you and your wife having sex in a cemetery at 2 a.m. Better yet, bust into a mausoleum someplace and have sex on some guy's coffin. Now, that I got to see. And I'm telling you right now, now that I've said it, it's going to happen. Within 6 months, I guarantee, somebody somewhere will post a video of him and his old lady having sex inside a crypt.
Yeah, like the crypt keeper.
Yeah, the crypt keeper, man, in the vault. They'll be having sex in there, man, right alongside Dracula's coffin. There you go. There'd be one.
I wouldn't have the courage for that.
For what?
Having sex near Dracula.
Well, he don't exist, man, so you don't have to worry about that.
Well.
He don't exist, man, so you don't have to worry about that.
You don't know.
He don't exist, man, so you don't have to worry. No, I don't need to know. He doesn't exist.
But if he did, would you?
If he did, would I what?
Have sex near his coffin?
Yeah, at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rance, and our technical director is Ralph Rodriguez, later from the beach.
Phil Hendry.